Washington tells two big European banks their disaster plans are not acceptable.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LegalZoom, providing legal solutions for business owners, including corporate filings and legal plans featuring attorney contract review and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Epson. Epson's smart point-of-sale solutions offers a new class of mobility to retail sales designed for improved customer service. Where there's business, there's Epson.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The Federal Reserve, in its role as bank regulator, asks big banks to show how they would do if a financial crisis swept through. The hope is that planning and ready access to pools of money would mean banks would not come begging for another bailout someday. The results of the second round of stress tests are in, and we could spend time on the 28 out of 31 that passed the tests, but that wouldn't be journalism, would it? BBC economics correspondent Andrew Walker is here with the two European banks that failed. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
It's Deutsche and Banco Santander. What is the U.S. Federal Reserve saying about these two banks?
It has concerns, essentially, about their processes by which they plan for their capital needs in the future. It's not a question of the Fed thinking, oh, my goodness, these two don't have the buffers that they need to withstand an adverse economic scenario. It's more about internal processes for looking at things like projections of revenue, the capital planning process, internal governance. It's that kind of thing. And the Fed thinks that they do need to take some action to put them in to ensure that they are capable of keeping themselves in robust financial health to deal with any problems they might face in the future.
So the Fed, in the role of the professor, has said this paper is not acceptable and they have to revise.
Something like that, yes. And I have to say, financial markets in Europe at least seem to have taken this somewhat in their stride. You know, it does indicate that these problems identified by the Fed in their US subsidiaries are not seen as contaminating the wider groups as perceived by their investors in their home markets in Europe.
BBC economics correspondent Andrew Walker, thank you for helping us with this.
My pleasure, David.
So 28 out of 31 banks tested, two fail. What about the last one? That's Bank of America. It got what amounts to a warning from the Fed about unnamed deficiencies. B of A was ordered to fix them and to resubmit. Now, it's precisely 35 days until tax day, April 15th, in case you somehow let that date slip your mind. The IRS says so far this year the average refund is just over $3,100, and in around 8 in 10 taxpayers will get a refund. Personal finance website Bankrate.com has a new survey that reveals what the typical taxpayers plan to do with this refund, or at least what they plan, hope, wish they'd do. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
One in three taxpayers told the survey they'll use their refund to pay down debt. Another third will invest or save it. A quarter will pay for necessities like food and utilities.
They're doing some pretty responsible things with these funds.
Bankrate tax analyst Kay Bell says only 3% plan a vacation or shopping spree.
Whether it is recovering from the recession and finally getting a job or getting a little more money from employers, I think people are just have realized the need to be more prepared.
Consumer psychologist Kit Yarrow, though, doesn't quite buy it.
They answer according to what they hope they'll do as much as what they actually will do.
Her own surveys of consumers find that people's plans to pay off debt and save are often aspirational.
After the fact, this is what I hear, is that I've spent some of it on clothing or I've spent it on an evening out. It felt like a windfall.
Yarrow says most taxpayers know the right thing to do with their refund. They just don't always do it. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The FT 100 in London is up 0.75% now. The S&P 500 future is up. The Dow and NASDAQ futures are down. The euro recovered a tad this morning, up 0.5% to $1.06.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, with the email and online marketing tool small businesses and nonprofits need to promote their organizations. Learn more at ConstantContact.com. And by Regis, providing temporary workspace to get businesses up and running so companies can stay connected. Regis, the new way to work. More information is at 1-800-OFFICES. And by Battelle. Battelle's next-generation biodetection system is designed to identify airborne hazards for safer living. Learn more at battelle.org.
at the EDU, part of the big South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. Some serious stuff, student data privacy, digital citizenship. But there are also important but fun conversations about games, how to get students excited about learning. Marketplace's Adrienne Hill reports.
My quest began with Phaedra Buenaderas from IBM.
Global lead for serious games and gamification.
Yeah, that's her real title.
It does sound serious.
Serious games, she tells me, are games that are entertaining plus. IBM is working on adding artificial intelligence to games to help students learn better. But designing an educational game that's actually fun isn't easy.
Now you can start to enter into the realm of what I like to call chocolate-covered broccoli when you do it wrong.
Dum-da-dum-dum. Chocolate broccoli is the thinly disguised anti-fun. Buenaderas hinted there was another path, so I moved on.
Okay, team at home, you should have already gotten your compass. At least I hope so, because you're going to need it.
This is Brain Chase, a treasure hunt for kids created by Alan Staker. To move ahead, kids have to read, take online classes, and solve puzzles.
You have to start with a quest. Get them in the shoes of a protagonist.
And educational game designers can't rely on violence to keep kids interested.
Grand Theft Middle School.
Yeah, Grand Theft Middle School. You can't have Grand Theft Middle School. So how do you give kids stakes that they're engaged in that are age appropriate? Or is the answer treasure?
It's always treasure.
Brain Chase's treasure is a $10,000 scholarship. And educational games aren't just for kids. Paul DeVarcy is a high school English teacher in Toronto. During the last month of the year, he turns his class into the psych ward from Ken Kesey's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
My students are put into the role of mental patients, and I take on multiple roles, either through videos or live performances, as the faculty that's running this mental ward.
DeVarcy uses Twitter and Facebook to post as the big nurse, challenges, questions, and quests for his students.
A really interesting thing about Kesey's novel is that his critiques of the more industrial elements of the mental institution that he describes in the novel coincide very well with critiques that we could levy against the education system.
Fun games can also be subversive. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.